views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
To the Lotus Place on this Wednesday night, 11/11/2015, and this week has been an explosive week, a week that made history on this Monday. Black power, black power, black power prevailed, black unity, the black fight, black struggle prevailed over terrorism, racial terrorism. The Missouri students came together and were able to force the wolf out of their position. I am just so proud of those students for coming together. They have been fighting for quite some time. This did not just erupt over the weekend. But what I am sad about is, well, I'm not sad about it, but it's just interesting that it took for the football team of Mizzou to actually go on strike and threaten to not play, which would have caused the University of Missouri of Columbia to have to pay $1 million to Brigham Young. So, of course, you know, when you start messing with that money, especially that college football money, that's millions and millions of dollars. So governor had to get involved, some other politicians, and hey, President Tim Wolf had to go. He had to pack it up and go. But you know what? I wonder if they'll do just like with the police officers and just send him over to some other university or college to continue. He may have to go to like a community college and be a president. Probably one of these corporations will pick him up and give him twice as much as he was making at the university. You know how they do. But nevertheless, he had to be removed from that position, and that whole demonstration proved the power of black athletes. And so when people like Muhammad Ali and Paul Robeson were standing up and risking their careers, now we see a resurgence of that, and I hope that more students, more football players and these basketball players, I hope that they come together and say, hey, not only are we going to demand that we don't have to endure all of these racial terroristic acts, but also pay us some money. Shoot, they need some money for bringing so many millions of dollars to these universities. So we will go into some of the history of that case, that whole situation, just in case you've been living under a rock for the past few days. But let me welcome in Aja and also Delta. Welcome in to the Lotus Place.
Welcome,
namaste,
welcome.
Namaste, namaste. Namaste, namaste. So what is going on? I think Delta has some hot topics, and then Aja wants to read something. You want to share something.
Well, Aja can go first. Let Aja go first.
Well,
it's however you want to do it.
This is about the MU thing. So once I read that, I want us to talk about it. So you
okay.
Do
okay,
yours.
Well, okay. Sure. Yeah. Jump in front of y'all.
Thank you, sweetie.
Okay,
come on, Delta,
well,
with those hot topics.
Well, yes, you know Delta got some hot topics. She on time tonight.
Well, yes.
You know what? They got a case, y'all, down in Alabama. And I know
Alabama.
Y'all have seen, Alabama. It's all on the news. It's been all on Nancy Gray tonight. It's all on CNN. It's the hottest gang on Facebook. They arrested an 8-year-old little black boy for murder. And they arrested him for murder. And so you need to pull it up a share. It's hot right now. And they arrested him. His mother and another lady went out and left 6 kids there. This baby, from my understanding, was the oldest. He was the oldest. He was babysitting. The 8-year-old, this 8-year-old boy was babysitting a 1-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 2-year-old. This 8-year-old child, while these two black hood rats, I got to call it like I see it, two scrumpy black hood rats goes to the club. They already got a house full of children. What you going to the club for, to look for more men to get more? I got to call it, y'all. I'm hot right now, and I know it sounds ugly, but I'm mad. They have ruined this child's life. They have left this child there with those 6 children. This young baby, this young boy got so agitated and so upset because the 1-year-old baby wouldn't stop crying. And the only way that he thought that he could get the baby quiet is he began to beat the baby, the 8-year-old boy, trying to shut the baby up. The baby dies from the injuries. The mother and the other lady left out to go to the club. Y'all know now, we went to the club at 8 o'clock, 12 o'clock when we was going out. We was in the house. About 12 or 1, we was in the house. Because my mother said, if you out after 12, ain't nothing open but legs. So that nothing but legs. So my mama said, nothing but legs, you locked out the house. But these hood rats went out at 11 and came back home, from my understanding, around about 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning. When they come back home, the two hood rats did not even go in the room and check on the babies or none of the kids. When they woke up the next morning at 11 o'clock, next morning, this is what the news said, and this is what the mothers told the police. When they woke up at 11 o'clock and went in there and checked on the baby was dead from the injuries. And do you not know, this child is charged with murder. They charged the mother with manslaughter. They charged her with felony child neglect and murder, I think, or something. But we were saying tonight, and Nancy Grace was saying, that the young child should not be charged at all. It would not hold up, the charge. The charge will not hold up on this child, because he was doing what he thought to get the baby quiet.
And he's too young to be babysitting. Now, how many children was it again? Go through the number of children.
The young man was keeping 5, plus he was there. That's 6.
I couldn't do that, my Jesus.
He's 8 years old. He was keeping a 6, a 5-year-old, a 1-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And I can't remember the age of the other one. But he was keeping all these children by himself, and he was the oldest, 8 years old. This is sad.
That's a lot of pressure.
So that's a good subject that we need to discuss. We need to see, and that's a whole nother show by itself. Why are these hood rats going out to the club and leaving the kids in the house by themselves?
They do it all the time.
It's so sad. So now Nancy Gray saying, that no charges should be filed on the child. All the charges should be leveraged towards the mother, because that's the right. Two women left those babies there with this. It's just horrible. Then,
yeah,
okay, let me go to my other hot topic. Then we'll talk about this later. Then we've got another hot topic where the police that was down in Louisiana that killed the six-year-old boy. Y'all know that this sounds strange from the beginning. We couldn't put two and two together. We knew something was going on. We thought it may have been dope or something. But now the young man that his son was killed, they said that him and the police knew each other. Now the girlfriend said, and I had it wrong. I thought that the man that got shot the other day was the one had been arrested for two rapes. No, it wasn't. It was the police officer had been arrested twice for rape. So now I'm saying to say this. The police officer, the young girl, the young lady that her and her boyfriend began to argue, and they left the club and he was chasing, the police started to chase them. Come to find out that police officer knew this girl from school. He started texting her on Facebook, trying to go with her. Now, this is the same police I've been charged with two rapes and got dismissed. And he started texting this young lady, and the young lady said the police officer started showing up at her house trying to start a relationship with her. She told him she did not want a relationship with him. And she told her boyfriend about he showed up at the house. So the boyfriend went to the police officer. This is how they knew each other. The boyfriend went to the police officer and told the police officer to stay away from his girlfriend and stay away from his house. So he automatically had a grudge against him. Now you got people coming out saying that this police officer, his father, worked for the district attorney's office. He had two rape charged against him by other women. They got it dismissed and thrown out. Then come to find out he had a bunch of more charges against him and got it thrown out. See, he was getting all his stuff thrown out because his daddy worked at the DA's office. So, okay, now the people are coming forth and saying these two police have been terrorizing that town. Everybody knew about it, but nobody could get nothing done about it. They saying it took a child's death. It took a child's death in order for them to do something about it. So
what's wrong? Hey, y'all. What's wrong?
Hey, King Ben.
What's wrong? We see what's wrong with the mainstream media. They call themselves journalists, but absolutely, most definitely, they're nothing but overly paid stenographers. This is a classic example. They don't ask the critical questions. They don't dig below the surface of the story that they receive from the authorities. Many times, the authorities are covering up.
Yes. So, this how he went after. And so he was so, they said him and the guy had been arguing. And this is his way of getting back at the boy.
It makes sense.
And killing the boy and getting him out of the way.
Uh-huh.
Getting him out of the way so he can get to the girl. But look at this. This police officer had been charged with two rapes and a whole bunch of other crimes. And his father, I think his father, the assistant at the district attorney's office, this is how he got away with
imagine
it. And they said, and he was terrorizing the town. Not only him, they said all the other people, you know, a lot of the other officers and marshals that was on this man, they said these men had so many charges on them, they shouldn't have never, never, ever been police officers from the jump. See, when you got
many of them
in the high, you got people in high places.
Yes,
they can do what they want. and get that's away it. With it, and you won't be able to say nothing. But it took that's a death right. of a child in order for this. So all this, you know, this is sad. Then one more hot topic. We go to Walmart. Y'all know I love Walmart, and I hate to say it, but
oh,
I just.
Oh, Jesus.
And we,
Hellmark.
Yeah, hello. Hello.
And, but anyway, listen, they got a white man.
We're going to take your black card.
Man,
make it real.
I forgot where it was set. I got to pull it up, and I forgot. I'm sorry, forgive me. I forgot what that was. And he been, but listen, this is the second time he done this. It's up north somewhere. I'm sure y'all need to be Googling this because we need to find out what town it's in. No, this true. We really do. We need to find out what town it's in. I got it on my Facebook, and I got to go back and look.
What
he
is it?
Went in the bathroom and took 3 jars of mayonnaise, and he's been masturbating in the mayonnaise jars and
stop
going
it.
And putting
stop
them
it.
Back. No, going and putting them back on the counter. And
stop it.
Somebody called him, but then they said this is the second time he undone this.
Now that you still love Hellmark.
Oh, that's what I'm telling you. When I saw it, it made my flesh cringe. He's been putting them back on the counter, and they say he's a habitual sex offender.
Was he John Q. Public that come off the street, or he worked there?
No, he didn't. He just come off the street. He didn't work there. And they called him one time before. And they chased him, and they tried to catch him, and they couldn't catch him. And he came back and did it again.
Well, I'm glad I don't do mayonnaise anymore. I stopped doing mayonnaise years ago.
Stop doing what?
Mayonnaise.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't do mayonnaise.
It's good
and
within
those are my,
reason. You know?
And those are my 3 hot topics for the night.
Did you all hear that the campus at University of Missouri is in turmoil? And part of the problem has been exacerbated by the class student president putting out false rumors that the KKK was coming on the campus. And that they arrested one young man off the campus who was threatening to kill any black person that he saw. Mm-hmm. But the tragedy is that those black students never understood the mentality of white supremacy, where they would never, ever tolerate blacks being so uppity that they wouldn't know their place. In the minds of most white supremacists, a black person was never, ever to force the president of an all predominantly white college out of the business. It's unprecedented. So you've got these students who came out of the area of Ferguson and knew what was going on with Michael Brown and the racism that blacks took it down through the years, these are they that made it to the campus that was built by black slaves in 1838 when the college started. It was built by black slaves. The racial animosity towards blacks all those years intensified and brought to a boiling point with the killing of Michael Brown. And mind you now, we saw none of the leading pastors in the Missouri area, the St. Louis area, or Ferguson area, that were standing with those students, even the early on of the protest. So you've got these pastors that long ago ran for the tall grass. These brave students, not knowing the psychology of white supremacy as far as the ramifications when you embarrass white supremacy. They don't say, okay, we'll come on the Lord's side and stay in church and become good students or adult behavior. No, they go for revenge. So now, if the black students thought they were raising the hell with the racism, wait until they experience the aftermath of the earthquake attacks. There is also the aftershock. White folks will not tolerate black people upsetting their game. And unfortunately for those students that are on the campus there, they are most vulnerable for being picked off. Some would have to really go off the campus because there will be retributions because a white man is forced to resign from a well-known racist institution. Blacks didn't want to go to...
Well-known racist institution.
And blacks didn't want to go to the well-known black institutions. So they want to go to a predominantly white institution. Blacks like a piece of trash and a glass of milk going to that college. And they couldn't take the racism, which is understandable, they couldn't take the racism anymore. But they have no backup to give them the kind of security when those white folks, be it on the campus or off the campus, get even with those black students for daring to upset white supremacy. And for all we know, this could be the beginning of the imminent race war that is already brewing with the expiration of the Obama being in the White House when his presidential term of office expires. I'm telling you guys right now, there will be a revenge for the fact that the enemy was in the White House as far as the eyes of the vast majority of white people, who was not the butler, the chauffeur, or the cook, but it was the chief executive. And unfortunately for Obama's silly ass, he never wanted to deal with his base to let us know that he was going to make a blow against white supremacy. With the death of Troy Anthony Davis, man, innocent as a lamb, on death row, convicted and was on death row for killing a white police officer with no physical evidence. Obama never told the former Attorney General Holder, never told him, you go down there to Savannah and tell those crackers, hand over the case and make this a civil rights case. Let that young man go to his death, and all this time, there's been no exposure of how the Attorney General's office under Holder and now this Loretta Lynch, they ain't going to damn thing except take up space.
Yeah. Well, let me give some history of this case just for people who, like I said, may not be familiar with what's going on. First, let me give out the phone number for people to call in. 641-715-3660. The code is 549032. Press *61 if you would like to speak. Okay, criticism over how the University of Missouri handled a series of racist incidents on campus this fall has claimed the jobs of two top officials, President Tim Wolf and Chancellor R. Bowen Lofton. Hours after Wolf announced he was stepping down, a news release from the UM system noted Lofton would stay in his position at the university's main campus in Columbia until the end of the year. Starting next January, Lofton will take over as director for research facility development. See, they just move them around, leading the school's effort to construct new facilities and renovate current facilities to meet the university's research needs. And they'll probably give him a pay bump. Just because they moved him from that position, that doesn't mean he's still not collecting his little coins, which is still wrong.
Right.
Let's see, Senior Vice Chancellor Hank Foley for Research and Graduate Studies was appointed Interim Chancellor. Let me see. That's not the article I really want to read. What's happening at the school? At issue is the school's administration's handling of several racist incidents that occurred this fall. In September, Peyton Head, a senior and the president of Missouri Students Association, said he was called racial slurs as he walked near campus. And what he said was he was walking on campus and some inebriated white boys in a pickup truck drove by and started calling him the N-word, nigger. He said, I really just want to show my simple existence is such a threat. I really want to know why my simple existence is such a threat to society. That's what he wrote on his Facebook post. That incident was followed by one on October 5th
when members of the Legion of Black Collegians were called the N-word while rehearsing for homecoming festivities. 3 weeks later, on October 24th, a swastika was drawn with human feces at a university residence hall. Okay, the school's response. The university at first was muted in its response. On October 10th, members of Concerned Student 1950, a student group named for the year, the first black graduate student was admitted to the university, blocked Wolf's car as it moved through a homecoming parade. The Columbian, Missouri newspaper reports, Wolf did not respond to the group's concerns while he was in the car. His driver revved the convertible's engine, and the car bumped into Jonathan Butler, a graduate student who is one of the group's members. He's the one that went on the eight-day hunger strike. A week later, Wolf met with members of the group, and on November 6th, he apologized. Racism does exist at our university, and it's unacceptable, he said. Too little, too late. That's Butler's view. He began a hunger strike on November the 2nd. He says he will continue it until Wolf resigns or he, Butler, dies. Butler is being supported by Concerned Student 1950, but the group also has other demands. I may get a chance to read those demands. Well, let me see. I can just read a few of them right here. Some of the demands, enforcement of mandatory racial awareness and inclusion curriculum for all faculty, staff, and students controlled by a board of color, an increase in the percentage of black faculty and staff to 10% by the 2017-2018 academic year, and the development by May 1st of a 10-year plan to promote a safer, more inclusive campus, an increase in funding to hire more mental health professionals for the MU Counseling Center, particularly those of color, and more staff for the social justice centers on campus. Let me just break right here. There was one student that said that when she would go to the school counselor at MU, they just completely ignored her when she told them that she was suffering from depression because of all the racial terrorism that was occurring on their campus. Let's see, okay, Butler does not share all of these demands. However, after Wolf's resignation, Butler told supporters, "You saw what we did here. We chose to fight for our community. We chose to do what was right during this time." What does Wolf say? Wolf had until Monday, refused to step down. He met with Butler last Friday, 5 days after the hunger strike began, and apologized in a statement. This is the statement from Wolf. "I regret my reaction at the MU homecoming parade when the Concerned Student 1950 group approached my car. I am sorry and my apology is long overdue," he said. "My behavior seemed like I did not care." You did. "That was not my intention."
Yeah, sure.
1 second here. Computer jump. Okay, he said that was not his intention. "I was caught off guard in that moment. Nonetheless, I had gotten out the car to acknowledge the students and talk with them. Perhaps we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be where we are today." But as Mariana noted, things went quickly south. On Friday night in Kansas City, a group of University of Missouri students approached the school's president. Candace, you're going to have to mute that phone, honey, now when you cough like that. Okay?
I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, let's take a quick break and then we'll come right back and we'll finish up this.
For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Okay, on Friday night in Kansas City, a group of University of Missouri students approached the school's president, Tim Wolf, outside of a fundraiser at a performing arts center. They asked him to give his definition of systematic oppression. This is what he said. I will give you an answer, and I'm sure it will be a wrong answer, you dumbass. This is what he says. Systematic oppression is because you don't believe that you have the equal opportunity for success. The students reacted in shock. And one said, did you just blame us for systematic oppression, Tim Wolf? Did you just blame black students? And that video is on YouTube. You can see that video. On Sunday, Wolf responded, we want to find the best way to get everyone around the table and create the safe space for a meaningful conversation that promotes change. We will share next steps as soon as they are confirmed. Those steps culminated in Monday's resignation. Okay. Besides the faculty who said they will walk out Monday, 32 members of the MU Tigers football team said they will go on strike. The school's athletics department response, upon receiving news of Wolf's resignation, the Tigers said they will play again. The team takes on Brigham Young, blah, 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 blah. They didn't want to pay that $1 million and lose all the future monies that they would have to pay out if that team would not play. It's sad that it took the football players joining that protest because they weren't thinking about those students until the football players decided to protest. I am going to play a clip, but before I play that clip, Aja has something to read. And then I think we have Brother Brown on the line and Mother Hattie. So welcome in.
Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening.
You know that's one of my alma maters, UM, Missouri.
You're kidding.
Columbia.
Oh, well, you'll have to share some firsthand stories then if you have some that you would like to share with us tonight. So, Aja,
sure,
what do you have for?
I didn't have a lot of trouble, though.
Mm-hmm. You didn't? Okay.
It was different back then. You won't believe this, but let me let Aja go on first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a Zen story, Z-E-N story. It's like a something like a proverb, a parable, that I felt that it related to what's going on with MU. Okay, so we were, as a people, we were once kings and queens, or queens and kings, with dynasties and all of that going on as African people. And our strongest and our bravest were taken and enslaved and brought to this land that we call the home of the brave, land of the free, and all of that. And to this day, we have been mentally enslaved. So this is what I want to read. This is a Zen story. It's about a king whose people had grown soft, okay? Dissatisfied with the state of affairs, the king hoped to teach them a lesson. His plan was simple. He would place a large boulder in the middle of the main road, completely blocking entry into the city. He would then hide nearby and observe their reactions. How would they respond to this boulder placed in the middle of the road? Would they find a way to move it, or would they get discouraged, quit, and return home? With growing disappointment, the king watched as subject after subject came to the boulder and turned away, or at best, tried half-heartedly to move the boulder before giving up. As you listen to this story, think about how we are as a people and how many, many distractions and just all kinds of horrible things have been placed in front of us to keep us enslaved, mentally as well as physically. Or at best, tried half-heartedly to move the boulder before giving up. Many openly complained and cursed the king or fortune or bemoaned the inconvenience, but none managed to do anything about it. After several days, a lone peasant came along on his way into the city. He did not turn away. Instead, he strained and strained, trying to push the boulder out of the way. Then an idea came to him. He scrambled into the nearby woods to find something he could use for leverage. Finally, he returned with a large branch and used it as a lever to dislodge and roll the boulder out of the way. Beneath the boulder, there was a purse of gold coins and a note from the king, which said, "Congratulations, you have discovered the power of leverage. With leverage, you can achieve anything you desire in your life." So leverage, what I get from this story, is what these football players use to get what they wanted. As a start, this is just a start. We know that the whole situation that's going on with MU does not end with the president resigning. This is only the beginning. But we do have leverage, and we have to know that we do have power. We cannot feel that we cannot win, because if you think you cannot win, then you won't. And we must, as a people, stand with these students and not abandon them, not find criticism in what they have done. One student, one black football player, former football player, announced to the news, we know that he was pulled out, and he stated, "I did not experience any racism." Now, Mother Hattie, I know you said you didn't experience any, but that was a long time ago.
No, I didn't say I didn't experience any. I said I didn't have that much trouble. As a black people, we've always experienced some racism. I had one person out of my years there that I thought had that as an issue. But it was really no issue, because as long as you do your work, and you get your grade, you can't worry about those people and their issues.
Okay. All right. Let me finish. One to me signals that there is more. Because if one person experienced racism, there are probably a ton of others who are experiencing racism as well. Now, that's one statement I want to make. Another one, King B, I want you to listen, and I want your audience to listen to Black Rose, to this.
Mm-hmm.
Words, first of all, thoughts have power. Words and titles have power, because they frame our thoughts into a certain set of beliefs without us even realizing it. Calling a royal human being Your Highness automatically places us in a position, it places them above us in our minds. Calling a judge Your Honor achieves the same thing. Not saying that we don't do that, but I'm making a statement. If in your mind you're saying that they are above you, therefore when we say white supremacy, we are automatically placing these people above us, because supreme means above you. And you are subconsciously telling your mind that they are superior, because you're using the word superior. White supremacists, for one thing, they're not white, they're pink, and they're European. So I would like for us as a people to try, I know it's hard because we've been doing it so long, to try to get those two words out of our vocabulary, because we're subconsciously thinking they have power over us, they're better than, although we know that this is not true, but subconsciously this is what we're telling ourselves: white supremacy, white supremacy, white supremacy. No matter what we do, they will win. No matter what we do, they will win. Yes, they got this person to resign, but oh, it's still going to be tough because they are what? White supremacy. We have got to change
the way we speak. We need to come up with two words that will describe them, that is lower than us, not higher.
Racist terrorists.
So we can think of two. I can think of two words right now. I can think of ankle biters. You know, there's people that's constantly biting on you, keeping you from doing what you're supposed to be doing. But let's try not to call them white supremacy, because they're not supreme. They're not supreme. Let's come up with another. They're parasites, really. They're energy parasites, and they're stealing our energy. And we help them when we place them over us in our thoughts. So just think about that, because words, we know this.
Words
are coming into a
light. Powerful.
They're very, very, very powerful. And see, we're in a shift right now. Everybody's not going to make the shift, because it's not their time. And it's not our place to say that they're slow or they're dumb or they're stupid or this or that. We can't judge. That's part of being conscious, not to judge people, because everybody is where they're supposed to be at this point in time. But as we become more conscious, then we have to respond more consciously. So as conscious people, we can set the path. We can set the tone and not give them the power that we're constantly giving them. Does that make sense?
Can I say something?
Of course. Of course.
I am saying that it goes back to the Constitution, where we are the only ethnic group that is defamed in the Constitution.
I know.
But what I'm saying is that, I say all that to say this, white people, the vast majority of white people, do not consider black people human beings.
I know.
They still consider us subhuman. And until we
But we can't go by what they, what out, what we
no,
think
saying,
of ourselves
saying,
has to be
saying,
stronger.
Let me finish what I'm saying. There's been no effort to erase, to abolish that, to amend that from the Constitution, that we are 3/5. It still says it in the Constitution.
Okay, but we can't go by the Constitution. We can't go by the Constitution. We can't live by that, because what? We know it's wrong. If we keep saying, but it's in the Constitution, but it's in the Constitution, it's also in the Constitution that all men are created equal. And we know that they're not doing that. So we can't just go by, no, but it doesn't say that. It doesn't say all white men. It says all men. So we know that we have been left out. So we can't just say, well, this is how they think of us. We can't go by that. We have to, in our mind, know that they are wrong and know that we are right, and how we think of ourselves. Our perception of ourselves has to be stronger than their perception of us.
If we keep thinking of
anybody's perception. If your best friend tells you, you know, you really look ugly in this dress, and you feel that you look fantastic, let your perception be stronger than theirs. And that's what we've got to do. That's what we've got to do with this Constitution. That's what we've got to do with the way they, quote unquote, feel about us. I don't care how they feel about us. I'm going to let my feelings about myself be more stronger and more powerful than what they think. And if we, as a people, if we all start thinking like that, it will overrule the way they think. Because if you constantly go by the way they think of us, then sooner or later it will become true.
Self-fulfilling prophecy, that's what that's called.
Exactly. Exactly. Push that out of our minds. Push that out of our minds as to what they think of us. Because that's what they're riding on. Because they keep pushing it, and we keep accepting it.
No. I don't think we should never accept it, but what I'm saying is that when we always said it was a civil rights movement and not a human rights movement, we are not considered human beings, And a lot of our, most of our people now, we don't understand that there's a difference between human rights and civil rights. If we were citizens of this country, then we would automatically have our human rights. Malcolm said that. That's when we really killed him.
Yes.
Because
that's what we need to think about. What we need to focus our energy on is not what they think of us. They don't think of us as human. So what we have to do is constantly think of ourselves as human beings, as supreme human beings. If we keep putting energy into that, whatever you put energy into, you give it power.
Aja, this is Scotty. I just want to say I'm totally feeling you over here, and I'm in 100% agreement with you, because this goes back to spiritual teachings that I was taught coming up. Also, it's a metaphysical principle, and you are exactly right. I am going to start changing my language. I only started using that term in, let's say, the past 3, maybe 4 years, and I didn't really use that term before, but when you break it down grammatically, I feel like if they were so supreme, then they would be able to. You're right. We're saying subconsciously to ourselves that they are supreme beings, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that we are losing the battle in our minds, because you can't, if somebody's supreme, you can't defeat them. And so, I mean, there are other terms that we can use. I know that a lot of people are not going to want to stop using that term because they say it accurately describes the system. But that's why I came up with the term proxy racism, because my study of this system is that they are only able to do what we allow them to do. If we were not helping them, if we didn't have proxy racist tools in high positions getting butter biscuits and going along mm-hmm. with our oppression, mm-hmm. that they couldn't do it. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a global system. If the African leaders over there wasn't selling out to people, then they wouldn't be in mm-hmm. Africa doing what they're doing. You know, I just totally feel you. It's metaphysically correct. It's spiritually correct. And I'm going to correct my language, because I don't think they're supreme.
If we send it out to the universe, if we say white supremacy, we're sending out to the universe. That's what we think. And the universe is responding. Yep. White supremacists. Yep. Yep. They're supreme over you. Yep.
I'm totally feeling a whole bunch
of us are doing that. A whole bunch. And just think of all that energy that we're sending out to the universe. They're over us. They're above us.
They have more power. Let me share one more thing, and I'm going to shut up. But, like, this whole back to Africa thing. See, a lot of our people mistakenly believe that every single black person here was an enslaved African. Well, that's because our enemies been teaching us their version of the history, his story, but it's not our story. And when I started researching my family history, I found out nobody in my family line was ever enslaved in this country, and that there were hundreds of free black Africans right here in the area I live in right now, that at least 400 of them fought in the Revolutionary War. I've made a post today of a picture that an artist drew of a black revolutionary soldier, and it talked about some of the historical records where the Hessians that were fighting on the side of the British said that the Revolutionary Army was totally integrated, that it had a whole bunch of black men in it, and how, you know, great of a fighters and how brave they were. So we don't have our true history. Some of us, yes, were brought here by enslaved Africans, but not all of us. But because our history has been stolen, we don't even know our true self. We're going around teaching our children that you're the descendant of a slave. You're the descendant of enslaved Africans and whatnot. And that's not to say anything about enslaved African, but, I mean, that's depressing when you think about it. That's depressing.
And these children grow up with this thought.
Yeah, with this stigma. This stigma. And,
right.
In like the University of Missouri. Now, when I heard the other day, I think it was on this program or I might have read it in an article. But when I learned that Missouri was built by enslaved Africans, well,
how about that?
I'm like saying this then. Well, then, you know what? That ain't white people's school. That school was built on the backs of black people, so it's ours.
Thank you.
I'm not leaving. Thank you. I am not conceding one inch of land. I am not conceding any institution on this continent and saying it's theirs. It's ours, whether we help, whether we contribute it as free black people or whether it was built with the labor of our enslaved ancestors, brothers and sisters. It's ours. We built it. I'm not giving it up. If you want to leave and go to Africa, then go. I'm not going.
That goes the same way with the nation's capital. Slaves built the nation's capital.
Enslaved.
Enslaved Africans.
Enslaved.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, the idea that we built the nation's capital and that a black man named Benjamin Banneker remembered how the streets were designed when the British burned the blueprint. He remembered how the streets were designed for D.C. The streets in D.C. is designed by the memory of Benjamin Banneker, who gave America its first clock. But all those buildings from the Capitol Dome on down, the White House, was built by enslaved Africans.
Right.
And free labor. It was free labor.
To make it clear in our heads as to what they did to us psychologically, he is not going to tell us because he is being paid by the government to keep us deaf, dumb, and blind. And those are the vast majority of our black pastors who have opted to become, I say, dare say, overly paid as far as, say, ecclesiastical pimps.
They proxy racist tools.
Go the route of Dr. King for fear of being assassinated. They run for the tall grass when it's issues like University of Missouri. And now I heard the fever. Did you hear the fever has spread to other campuses, like this college in upstate New York, or talking about college in upstate New York, and then Yale
in
Connecticut.
In Yale, the students are protesting because of the, and I want to say something about this, the white girls only party. Yale had a party, and they, I guess they were telling the African girls that they couldn't come in.
Yes.
Because it was all white girls' party. But you know what? This is what I have to say to that. Because Aja and I were speaking about this earlier. Number one, black people need to stop trying to force their way into this little white realm with them. That's what anybody, that's just like you trying to force yourself into a relationship with somebody that you want to be with. If they don't want to be with you, don't force yourself on them. So stop trying to insert yourself somewhere where it's not even a space or a place for you.
You're
not welcome. Wait a minute, and let me finish this. And so I would suggest that black people need to do whenever that occurs on a campus or, say, at your a place of employment, if they're having a white-all party or whatever, if they're having a white-all party on campus, then go have your all-black party. Just say, oh, okay, no white people. And then guess what? The media will come out to that, and they will say, well, why are you having an all-black party? And then that's when you bring attention and shine the light on, well, these people had an all-white party. I didn't see you out here on that.
So what do you say to that?
Yeah, as I just said, stop focusing on the negative of what they're doing, and let's focus on the positive of what we can do in our lives to uplift ourselves. I'm not thinking about these people. I learned that from just living, and then my friend Sekele, who is a musician in D.C., Sekele said, I'm not worried about these people. I'm focused on my money. I'm trying to do what I do, and that's what we need to do. Stop focusing on them silly-ass people. They ain't doing nothing but the same old bullshit they've been doing forever.
But we should not accept mistreatment from anybody. Like I said, this is ours as much as anyone. So I'm not, you know what, I understand what you're saying. No, I'm not. I don't want to be around a bunch of drunk white people to begin with because you know what's going
to
happen with people using alcohol and all that kind of stuff. But I'm saying is I'm not going to say, well, I don't worry about people, period, but I'm concerned about things like I'm concerned about human trafficking and modern day slavery. So we're not going to accept any mistreatment, but I feel you what you say on this little petty stuff. So what, they ain't want you in your party. Yeah. So what?
Right.
But here's the problem. There are those amongst us, happen to be black, who are suffering from oppression. Queen Mother Moore, who was one of my mentors, she said we're suffering from oppression psychoneurosis. And there is the damage done to our brains that we don't feel comfortable unless we are around white folks to give us certification that we are all right. We're so far gone, we're addicted to white folks, that we don't think that we can do anything except without white folks approving it of whatever we do. And this is a tragedy. Now, you're on a predominant white campus, and you are encountering this racist attitude because they feel you don't belong there, and they think, well, you might have got this affirmative action way that they had to make it possible for you to get on the campus, because you didn't have the grades to get on there by taking the SAT test and getting high scores. So they make a provision to have X amount of blacks on the campus. But the idea is that they will never, black people have to understand the history of white supremacy and understand that they will never. All right, what's that?
White supremacy.
Well, I'm saying we never understand the psychology of the mentality of white supremacy as far as the enemy is believing in a false theology and a false sense of security. That's what it is. But our people have bought into that. And we have to understand that if we're the first, the original man, we're the original woman, then we have to understand how is it possible they took our history, took it and destroyed it, and gave it back to us, having us to believe that we were nothing to society. There's nothing to society. You got a black man running for president who says that Joseph built the pyramids to store grain. Can you imagine a black man saying that in the year of 2015, and you know, it's a sad commentary where the man is named Ben, and he has no knowledge of self. So a lot of our people walk around here who are devoid of knowledge of self, and don't understand the enemy's mentality where they consider us subhuman. And we have to understand ourselves: we are human, and that we are a great people. We have always been the originators and not the imitators, and that when you are dealing with the people that feel that they have to always keep you psychologically conditioned to accept their false ideology, false social psychology, and demented way of behavior towards people of color. Black in particular is considered their number one arch nemesis. Let me say this, I'll be finished. They hate us for surviving all these years. Too black, too strong. And when you go through what they put us through after we lost our reconstruction rights, when the Klan was born, and the lynchings began. The North, ran by Republicans, told the South, ran by the Democrats. Here are two parties now. Here are two political parties. The North, still fearing a second Civil War, told the South, ran by Southern Democrats, we will pull the Union troops off there, guaranteeing blacks their reconstruction rights. And you could, the proviso was, if they never ever talk about ever seceding from the Union, we will pull the Union troops out, and you could do to the blacks whatever you wanted to. That's the beginning when the Republicans sold out.
All right, Canty. Okay, Canty. Okay. We're going to go to a break, and I want to play this clip when we come back. All right, let's go to a quick break. All right. Thanks so much.
Thought about getting into podcasting but don't know where to start?
have something to say to the world but don't know how. The popularity of podcasts and internet radio streaming continues to grow with millions of people on the planet gaining internet connectivity through a multitude of devices. In the current media age, people can browse internet radio stations or listen to podcasts right from the dashboard of their cars. There are few barriers to anyone who wants to produce internet-based media. To encourage media production for black people by black people, if you are an independent black media producer or want to become one, the nonprofit Black Talk Media Project is offering unlimited and unmetered podcast hosting services below industry pricing. Need more information about the industry and the technology? Find out how to create internet-based radio broadcasts and or podcasts at www.knowledgebase.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.knowledgebase.blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Students at the University of Missouri are celebrating today after their president, Tim Wolf, stepped down amid complaints of his handling of racial issues and discrimination on campus, rather. The faculty had planned a walkout, and the football team had threatened to forfeit games if he did not resign. Mizzou has dealt with multiple racial controversies over the last few years. CrimeCiter's Graham Cates joins me now to look into this. Graham, you've been tracking the previous incidences. What did you find?
You know, well, most people have kind of just started to hear about this, or maybe in the last couple of days began to hear about this. There have been a series of incidents going back really 5 years that have kind of boiled over in these last few days. One of the most talked about ones was something that's referred to as the cotton ball incident often. In that case, that was March 2010, and two students put like little piles of cotton balls outside a Black Culture Center on campus. And though campus police initially described it as a hate crime, they were actually just charged with littering in the case. And so there were a bunch of other cases, which we can maybe get into later. But you can fast forward to the Michael Brown incident last year in Ferguson. And since this is Missouri, so many of the students are from St. Louis or the nearby region. And what they've said throughout this was that the university itself was kind of silent on the entire thing while they were attending protests in and around St. Louis. The university never really came out and sided with them or really stated its position on the matter. And then this year, the student body president, his name is Peyton Head, in September, posted something to Facebook about an incident that he experienced on campus. He said, some guys riding on the back of a pickup truck decided that it would be okay to continuously scream the N-word at me. I really just want to know why my simple existence is such a threat to society. He said, this is my reality. Is it weird that I think that I have the right to feel safe here too?
And the university had no response to that.
You know, that kind of ignited this whole thing. The university, some university officials responded to that, but there wasn't a deep investigation into it. And then eventually at homecoming, a bunch of students lined up in front of the school president's car. And this was kind of a greater protest to this overall climate that he was referring to. And that's really where police come into this also. What they said happened in this case was they were protesting and the police threatened to arrest them. And the police waved pepper spray canisters at them. Meanwhile, people in the crowd were yelling things at them. And the driver of the university president's car during this homecoming parade, according to the students, even nudged one of them with the car.
Wow. There was a swastika that was discovered in a residence hall. Talk about the reaction to that.
Right. And there's actually kind of a history of swastika coming into play here. In this case, it was a swastika that was drawn using someone's feces in a residence hall. And again, this is one of these things where people on campus were saying this is a hate crime, and right now it's being investigated as vandalism, and that hasn't been concluded yet. No one's been arrested for that, so we don't know how that's going to be charged, but it actually leads into some of the other previous cases. In April, another student who had put up a swastika and burned swastikas actually into a wall was arrested, and again, police originally said this is a hate crime, but he ended up pleading to a misdemeanor property damage charge. And the student newspaper, the Missourian, actually tracked a bunch of these. And there are so many cases in and around Columbia, Missouri, where the school is, where it starts out looking like this is going to be a hate crime case. And then in the end, someone pleads to a much lesser charge. There are things, there are assaults that assault motivated by discrimination. And that was in September, actually, ended up being a plea to a misdemeanor third degree assault charge. February 2012, someone keyed a racial slur into a Black high school student's car. He was charged with assault motivated by discrimination, ended up pleading to a misdemeanor charge. And then several other cases just like that, dating back 5 years or so.
Wow. Graham Cates, some very interesting reporting. Good job. Thank you very much for coming by and sharing that with us.
We would now take time for questions.
And then another thing, and I don't know if everyone heard the other interview, but I do want to take this to the platform to make one thing clear. When we look at what's been happening on campus, especially in terms of activism with Black students, I would be remiss, you know, being frustrated if I did not acknowledge the people who got us here to where we are right now. Not only the students who have been fighting for us since Gus T. Whitman was allowed here at the University of 1950, but specifically when we look at post-Ferguson activism that happened here at the university, the movement that was started in terms of igniting the fire with Black students was ignited by three queer Black women who started everything that centralized about the message of why we got here. So, look at why did we have to get here in the first place, and why the struggle, and why did we have to fight the way that we did. At the end of all this, after all the letters we sent, all the in-person interactions, after all the forums we've attended, after all the tweets and DMs that we've sent, telling the administration about our people, it should not have taken this much. It is disgusting and vile that we find ourselves in the place that we do.
The Mizzou president under fire tonight by a growing list of high-profile people, including head coach Gary Pinkel and now the Missouri governor. Many members of the football team are today on strike. Good evening. I'm Amy Holly. Mizzou football players on strike this afternoon. They say over racism on MU's campus, and they're vowing not to play until the university's president steps down. But Tim Wolf this afternoon gave no indication that he plans to do that. Wolf released this statement this afternoon addressing the controversy, saying, quote, "It is clear to all of us that change is needed, and we appreciate the thoughtfulness and passion which have gone into the sharing of concerns." In the statement, Wolf says he and his administration have been working around the clock to address the racism on campus, and the university is already working on a plan to do just that, to correct it. He says many of the students' demands are met in that plan, and the Board of Curators approved it over the summer. The university hopes to announce that plan in the spring sometime. Wolf says in the meantime, he plans to keep an open dialogue about the issues affecting that campus. The president not only releasing that statement today as the pressure mounts, but also faced a vocal group of protesters on Friday night when he visited UMKC's campus.
The systematic oppression is because you don't believe that you have the equal opportunity for success.
You don't believe!
Well, a bystander shot that video, posted it on YouTube this weekend. Wolf told protesters on the Kansas City campus that systematic oppression is because you don't believe that you have the equal opportunity for success. Well, that, of course, set off the crowd. The racial climate at MU has been tumultuous for months, but a growing number of students believe the university hasn't reacted appropriately or quickly enough. So a graduate student announced several days ago that he was undertaking a hunger strike until there is change. And some of the key incidents that have increased those tensions started back in April. Racial slurs and graffiti found at a residence hall. That graffiti did include a swastika. And then in September, the president of the Missouri Students Association says he was called a racial slur. And then in October, somebody disrupted the Legion of Black Collegians 2015 homecoming royalty court rehearsal using more racial slurs in that incident. Well, there is growing support for the football team on this social media site this afternoon. If you follow the hashtag ConcernedStudent1950, you can see the hundreds of tweets about it already. It's one of the top trending topics here in Kansas City and the United States right now. Well, today, Mizzou coach Gary Pinkel standing by his players who say there just hasn't been enough done. He, too, is weighing in on all of this. Sporting Man Action Sports Director Frank Bull is here on how the team and the coach is handling it all.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It really didn't hit the national scene until this football protest. As a matter of fact, Amy, this is a huge story regionally, but it exploded nationally when the Mizzou football team got involved. They were supposed to practice today to prepare for Saturday's game against BYU at Arrowhead, but that was canceled. Now Saturday's primetime game against BYU is in dire jeopardy. This tweet shows over 30 members of the team locked arm in arm in solidarity because they feel Wolf has either ignored or mishandled racist incidents on campus. After canceling practice, Pinkel tweeted out this morning, 11 o'clock, the Mizzou family stands as one. We are united and we are behind our players. And one player told reporters he and his teammates want to play, but standing up against racism is one of the most important things they could ever do.
Jason, were you guys scheduled to have practice today or anything? And you're not having enough?
We're not having much.
Any idea when you will?
Whenever this gets resolved.
If Wolf doesn't resign or isn't removed from office and the players continue their boycott, Saturday's game against BYU will be canceled. That means MU will forfeit and they will owe BYU $1 million for breach of contract. But here's the real problem. Long after Tim Wolf's situation is resolved, the cloud of racism is going to remain in Columbia, and it won't just be used against the school's athletic programs during recruiting. It'll be used against university itself as they try to attract gifted minority students to all aspects of academic life. And, Amy, they better get this thing resolved in a hurry, make sure that cloud goes away.
Which means it can affect really all people on Missouri's campus.
Everybody and everybody on campus, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
In 1923, James T. Scott, a black man, he was a janitor on that campus, MU's campus. He was lynched by an angry mob on Stewart Road because he was accused of raping a white girl. He was in jail, and he was jailed, and the white mob, as they historically have done, pulled him out of the jail and lynched him on a bridge right near that campus. I want to bring in and welcome in a guest, Brother Astro. And Brother Astro faced some serious racism, terroristic racist threats on a couple of campuses where he was a student. Astro, are you there with us?
Yes, I'm right here, sister. And thank you for including me into the conversation. Sisters and brothers, greetings, much love, stay black, stay powerful, stay beautiful. Glad to be here with you. I've been following the conversation. And those clips that you played very artfully, very skillfully, and very timely, we all saw at the very end of how this story developed, how the focus on athletics became the primary focus and the primary priority of the university.
Mm-hmm.
So they lay cotton balls down at the Black Student Union, the Black Student Hall, because we are the men, women, and children who build the economy. And if the economy in the South is built on cotton, we own it. And so even with in this case with athletics, mm-hmm. we're seeing. And as you've already stated very clearly before, it was only when the black football team, there are white people on the team, but it's a black football team. The minorities are these pink-skinned European rejects. And when I called them that, pink-skinned European rejects, they have convulsions. There's no white supremacy here because there's no supremacy at all.
Right.
They are cowards. They are inbred. They are subversive, subhuman, and substandard. I was expelled as a grown man and as a graduate student with a perfect academic record because I had the audacity, the black unapologetic audacity to challenge a long-time tenured white professor who was teaching African folklore in a Arkansas State University mm-hmm. class. This is so Arkansas and Missouri are their cousins. They're kissing cousins, as they say in the South.
Huh.
In the South, what they say is a young white woman, because this is not what our family does. A young white woman can stay a virgin as long as she can outrun her brothers. This is This is the consciousness, this is the common lingo that they have about themselves and about who they are. They know how inbred and backwards they are. They know that they were emptied from the slums, from the jails, and from the nut houses in England and Western Europe and sent over here.
Mm-hmm.
And that is who we have been dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we have been here for thousands upon thousands of years before they got here.
Mm-hmm.
But
true.
I've listened to the brothers and sisters who are on the line and have said that they have gone to Mizzou. Look, I have cousins that go to Mizzou. They are whitewashed, bootlicking, coonhead, racist, apologetic, white devil, pass card giving individual Negroes who were only there because that was the only opportunity they had in their own exclusive comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from California, and we, and look, I graduated from college in 2004. So if some people are able to put together the pieces of what the story I'm going to tell you, you realize who I am. My name is Astro. I'm from LA. But because they burned a cross, and these were athletes that burned the cross, and that was the initial lightning rod that happened. And so a cross was burning in front of a dormitory that was passed off and dismissed by the administration. I happened to be a senior, and everyone else who was in my cadre, men, women of different multicultural backgrounds, but mostly black. Let's make that clear. We were mostly black. Took it upon ourselves to not only mobilize, but organize and issue demands. Those are three things that are important and most of the time are missing from the most recent popular organized movements. You have to mobilize, but you have to organize too for long standing progress. But you also have to issue demands.
Mm-hmm.
Because the enemy never concedes anything without demand.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I would be in roundtable meetings with the administration and the president. I would tell him to shut up. White people sweat when I walk in the room. I give them shakes.
Okay.
Like a crack addict having withdrawals.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know who they are and I do not care.
Mm-hmm.
They are my children anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But they waited for us to graduate. So any Negroes who are out there and went to Mizzou or any of these institutions, whether it's Yale or Cal State Fullerton, realize that there is a game you have to play in order to get your piece of paper.
Hello.
I got my piece of paper because I didn't play the game, and I was more dangerous than I was as a student than I was as a graduate. So so I have professors now who tell me, and even alumni who are under me, that tell me, and some of them were Black Panthers, told me, look, after your class graduated, they instituted a whole new policy of admission. No Black people that at least were not biracial or completely apolitical. We shut down classes. We had FBI investigations. Look it up. 2004, Claremont Colleges. That was us. That was me.
2004, Claremont Colleges?
Claremont Colleges, Southern California, on the edge of Los Angeles County. My sister's from New York, Northern California, Chicago, Oregon, Washington. I mean, the only white person in the crew was a white girl from Oregon. Everybody else was black, and there was one Asian girl from New York that still spoke Chinese and goes back. So she has not lost touch with her roots. So when it comes down to it, we are all primary troublemakers. in a 2000, this was happening in 2004, let alone 1964, 1944, whenever any of y'all went to school. But the difference now is that there is a critical mass of critical consciousness. Let me repeat that. There's a critical mass of critical consciousness. There was nine of us in a school of 4,000 or 5,000. That was hard to make. It was hard to make a difference in our last semester as seniors because everyone was waiting for us to graduate and get the fuck out. And including the professors, the administrators, and the students. They were tired of hearing our shit because we would beat people up. But the thing is now we're all out in the world, and these things are happening as a microcosm of what we were seeing back in 2004. And this is happening. Look, there are so many untold stories across the world. The only reason why we know about this is two things. In my opinion, two things. That the football team decided to strike, and because football, basketball, baseball even, is black-dominated, black-organized, and black-empowered. However, there was also a young, brave black student that decided to have a hunger strike. Now, that is revolutionary. Because if a student dies because you will not make political and policy reforms, not revolution, we're talking about reform. If you cannot make policy reform and you allow a student to die, everything is over. Even Gandhi was able to achieve that, as racist as he was. People will respond to you when you put your life on the line willingly, unviolently, nonviolently. Right. Nonviolent revolutionary life-threatening protest does make a difference. I've seen it happen so many different times. I'm not going to go on a hunger strike because I need my protein to bust heads.
All right.
So I give the look. You were talking about other like neuro. It's a spiritual and a cosmic resonance, but also. As far as academics concerned, it's called neuro-linguistic programming. Use the words that influence your thoughts and by extension your behavior and your prospects, your potential. So I don't call them white supremacists. I call them maggots. I call them crackers. I call them honkies. I call them pink-skinned pigs. I call them European rejects in order to take the vulgar out of it in an academic setting, and I have been expelled as a grown man from a state institution, from graduate school. They know the power, the influence, and the suggestion that it has when there's even one. I am one black man, the only, in an African studies course, and I have seen the eyes, the words, the taunts, the slings and arrows of the lynch mob. But I didn't back down. I've had rooms of people, and since I've been in Arkansas, roomfuls of these pink skin punk ass candy cracker honky tonk Opie Cunningham motherfuckers come at me because they heard words that they did not like.
Right.
And they called the police on me. Like the sister that was attacked by Sergeant Slam, who was a holdover from the 1980s WWF in that classroom. Which was a reenactment of a plantation rape scene. And we all know this. Our spiritual guides are talking to us. Look, that's how your grandmother was raped. They would pick her up and slam her in the dirt and break her will to fight back and then rape her. And they will do it in front of any and everybody and not care. Unless one stands up or two or three. And it's just as easy as developing a comprehensive, critical, but proactive defense protocol. The police have a protocol, so when they pull you over, as soon as you look behind your, as soon as you look over your shoulder, you got three police cars.
Yep.
we can do the same thing. All, but you just have to rip off that mask of civility, rip off that mask of powerlessness. You are not powerless.
Right.
If you were powerless, they would not need weapons, batons, and stun guns, and tasers, and sonic cannons, and biological weapons, and Ebola. They won't need any of those things if you weren't as powerful as you are.
Right.
As powerful right. as we are.
Right.
Yes.
So
yes,
this was
yes,
happening.
Yes.
I was doing this in 2004. I take a break from school because I'm tired of dealing with these pink-skinned, pussy-cracker-ass motherfuckers. And I go back to school as a grown man in graduate school, and it's worse now. I'm telling you it's worse now. And there's a critical mass of critically-minded, fearless people who are living and growing and maturing in the age of information. The hippies called it
yeah.
the age of Aquarius. We have information
yeah.
at our fingertips that people would have to go to the library to read, but there's no libraries anymore. Everything is here. So
yeah.
so we need to bridge that generation gap. We know something and we can teach something to each other at the same time and realize that the time is now. Not now, right now. Stay black.
Stay
all
black.
Right.
Stay
yeah.
black and
yeah.
stay elevated and stay proud.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Astro, for those words and sharing your story. I know when you first told me about what happened to you at the University of Arkansas, when you said that white professor was teaching that black studies class, I definitely can relate to that because I recall when I was at the University of Memphis, I can't think of the name of that course, but this white professor was teaching the course, and he actually admitted to all of us, well, most of us in the class, we were like, we were seniors in the African American History and Studies program. And so this professor was teaching the class, and he said that he just kind of like had to brief himself and like really study up for the class so that he could teach the class. He kind of like went through a few books and studied a little bit over the summer so that he could be prepared to teach the class. And we were like, are you serious? First of all, why is this white man teaching us about
right.
our history? You know, and then number two, he's not even qualified. They could have
right.
hired a graduate student to teach that class or someone with a sense of knowledge and, I mean, something, just anybody but him. Okay, I mean, I just don't agree with white people teaching our history. I just don't agree with that at all. That's just me.
It doesn't make
I
sense.
I could be wrong.
It doesn't make sense.
That's just me. Let me see. Aj, I think you said you had something else to read, and I know Brother Brown wants to share something with us. He's still there.
Yeah. I wanted to say that anytime if there is a war going on, which is what we're in, like the brother said, we're in a war right now. A lot of people are not aware of it, but we are in a war. And you stand up to the enemy, the wind will not be swift. It will not be a bowl of cherries, and it will not be easy sailing because they're going to fight back. And we should not expect it to be easy. We need to put our gloves on, put all our armor on, and get ready for the fight and not give up. Not just think that, oh, they're gonna retaliate. They're gonna pull back their scholarships. Oh, woe is us. You know, maybe we shouldn't have done that. No, keep it moving. Just because they fight back doesn't mean that we should pull back. We should keep going. Now, I know everybody is familiar. Everybody on this phone is familiar with Shaka Zulu, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Shaka Zulu, he had all kinds of methods and tactics that he devised to win against the pink Europeans. He did not focus on all the things that they had done to them. He used his focus to develop ways to win. If we
constantly concentrate on what they have done, how they think of us, then we are putting the energy into them and giving them more strength. We have to focus on what we can do. Like the brother just said, the power that we have, and use that power. Use our power to win this war. And we can. We can. And we do, and we do nothing but give them energy when we constantly say that they're doing this and they're doing that and they used to do this and they used to do that. Okay, we know this. We know this. It is time for us now, because we're very familiar with what they've done and all of that. It's time for us, like the brother said, mobilize, get your tactics together, get your plans together, because they're going to fight back. They're definitely going to. They're sitting there now planning. And that's the way that they have won in the past, because they plan for 10, 15, 20 years ahead. We plan for tomorrow.
We're planning for the weekend.
Exactly. Exactly. That was my point. We got to stay focused. We got to stay focused. Stay on this. And we got to hit this where it hurts. I mean, it's sad that they had to go that route, hit them with the pockets, hit them in the pockets, you know. And like the brother said, I'm not going to eat. I'm not going to eat. I may die, but this is my tactic. And it proved to win the first leg of the fight. That's just the first leg of the fight.
You got to be willing to stand for something. And that brother was willing to stand for liberation and fighting against the racial terrorism that was taking place on their campus. I'm just so proud of those students, all of them.
Me too.
Brother Brown?
Yeah.
Brother Brown, you still there? Hey, you want to jump in and share anything with us?
Yeah, you got to go to break, right?
Oh, sure do. Thank you. We went right past the break. Thanks, Brother Brown. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with Brother Brown.
I saw in the paper where they, on the television, where they took this black woman down in Selma, Alabama, and knocked her right down on the ground, dragging her down the street. You saw it. You're trying to pretend like you didn't see it, because you knew you should have done something about it and didn't. This showed the sheriff and his henchmen throwing this black woman on the ground. On the ground. And Negro men standing around, doing nothing about it, saying, well, let's overcome them with our capacity to love. What kind of phrase is that? Overcome them with our capacity to love. And then it disgraces the rest of us, because all over the world, the picture is flashed, showing a black woman with some white brutes with their knees on her, holding her down, and black, full-grown black men standing around watching. Why, you are lucky to let you stay on Earth, much less stay in the country.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I've said this before in this same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough, or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them. And I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Are you searching for the best in online black radio?
then go to BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, Black Talk.
I'm going to change my speaking and start speaking like Nina Simone. I just love the way she speaks. I love her, that blackness.
Yes.
That we're the most beautiful people in the world. So don't trip now when you start hearing me on the radio like that. Don't be like, trying to sound all different. Yes, hey. I sure am. I'm trying to change.
You're using a good example of what it is to be proud, blackness, and she lived the life of being a proud black woman.
Mm-hmm.
That film, Where's Miss Simone? That film that was played
on
five
Netflix.
Times.
Oh, God, that's good.
Yeah, but it was in this movie theater here in Manhattan, the IFC theater in Manhattan. It was held over for five times, and each time I saw it twice. There was a standing ovation each time the film ended. A standing ovation. But it was held over five times. Nina Simone, I believe, was dealt a dirty hand by a government intervention through her crooked, despicable husband, who could care less about black liberation. But I think he was working as an agent to subdue her and to keep her in a situation where they said she was bipolar. But he contributed to her misery and pain, according to her daughter. And you saw the film, how he would smack her so hard with all his might.
Yeah,
in front
he
of
was
the
abusive.
Door. And then he had blacks running from him when he was still on duty as a cop up in Harlem. They would run from him when they saw him. So that means he had no rapport with his fellow black sisters in Harlem. He was considered a beast, a pig, all the above when you see someone that would cause you to have great pain and misery if he got his hands on you. And he could even kill you. Because, see, every cop knows you can kill a black person, abuse a black person, and get away with it. There's no penalty to pay. So Nina Simone, when you see the interview with her, I tell you, Shara, she will mobilize you and ignite your fire that you would know you would have your competence and your confidence that you are on the right track thinking like you think, my dear sister.
Mm-hmm. Love her. Okay, bring it, Brother Brown. What do you have for us tonight, Brother Brown?
Well, I've been listening from the beginning of the program, and I just want to add some comments. When we utilize words to define situations, I don't think we're throwing negative energy towards the enemy. I mean,
yes,
positive
we are.
Energy. Wait a minute, let me finish. We're not throwing positive energy towards the enemy, in my opinion, because we have a generation that doesn't understand the playing field of this game for white folks, okay? And we have to define that for them because they didn't grow up during the civil rights movement. They have a minute degree of knowledge about what went on. They have a minute degree. I heard Brother Cantor mention Reconstruction, and I want to elaborate briefly on that. There was never Reconstruction for black people. Reconstruction was to reconstruct the Southern businesses that suffered during the Civil War. Okay, let's make that point clear. There was no Reconstruction for blacks. There was a period in this history that they use that word, and I go back to what one of my mentors, Bobby Wright, who wrote a book called Psychopathic Racism. He who defines words rule. Okay, we have no words in our dialect that we use daily that have been defined by African people. Okay, that's number one. We use the English words out of the English language, which was defined by Europeans. So in order for us to reverse this situation, we have to go back to the basics of learning who we are and what our power is, which is our ancestors. the spiritual. You remember that clip I showed you, Cheryl, when we were together about Credo Mouffoy?
Uh-huh.
You saw how deep he was in telling the history of our people.
Uh-huh.
See, that was a spiritual history that we know nothing about. And to overcome this European, number one, he has no spiritual power because everything he has believed in, which he taught us to believe in, is his creation, which has no spiritual power.
Thank you.
That is the beginning of our war. See, I learned that through the Art of War by Sun Tzu. When you have an enemy, you have to define your enemy, watch your enemy, and learn how to defeat your enemy. Our power to defeat these crackers with the elements of white supremacy that are defined by them, because that's how they orchestrated what they did through religion. Through religion. So their religiosity has brainwashed us into believing that we have no spiritual power. I heard your mother mention, I heard Sister Aja mention Shaka Zulu. Shaka Zulu knew about the spiritual power of his ancestors. Okay, Queen Nzinga knew about the spiritual power of her ancestors. Even after they captured her by threatening her to kill her sister and making her change her name, she still came back and forth to the death because she knew the power of her spiritual power of her ancestors. But here we are today, and we have been incorporated into all of these ideologies that have nothing to do with us as African people. I have used this for the last maybe 8-9 years. Okay? I mean, religiously used it. I've used it prior to that, but I have accomplished so much by understanding libation. Just pure water. And knowing that the spiritual power of my ancestors will overcome the physical adversity of the white supremacist race. And it works. So now that I have learned that, I teach it to other people. Because we can go out there and get 9 millimeters and 10 millimeters and all these so-called physical weapons and get annihilated. But when we use the spiritual power of our ancestors and stop believing in Asian or European ideologies of false spiritual wickedness, we will be not only at war, we will be winning battles of war. And this has to be taught to the younger generation. Because I'm not going to be here forever. My time is limited because of my age. But the teachings and understanding that the ancestors have passed on to me, I intended to pass it on to those who are younger than me. And don't get mistaken about the word Godun. That is a spiritual word of our ancestors. It was transformed into voodoo by Hollywood and Jews to make this thing that this was something very, very degrading, demonstrative, demonic. It was only the spiritual power of our ancestors using the elements of nature because they had no weapons to defeat the Europeans. If we go back, and I remember I did the clip on the Haitian Revolution. And if we go back and remember that, that was the spiritual power that our Haitian ancestors used to defeat the three major powers of this world, which is France, Great Britain, and the United States. So, to boil it all down, when you define white supremacy and racism as a system of oppression, and showing our younger generation, this is what you have to fight against. This is where your battle lies. And then you incorporate all of the elements that have been used to degrade us as a people. For instance, the drug industry. You know, now there's a massive influx of Mexican heroin coming in here where it used to come from Europe. It used to come from France. It used to come from Turkey. Okay, now there's some brown, they call it Mexican mud. Well, it's anyway, it's brown, it looks like brown sugar. It's been, I mean, it's just like the world of crack cocaine that has infiltrated our community. And it's twice as potent as the dope that they had in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. So now, we have to educate our children that all of these detrimental elements that are being used against us, just like we talked about the LGBT stuff. Okay, that's some European stuff. Okay, that's not part of who we are. Christianity, Islam, and Judaism is not part of who we are. We're African people, with African roots, and our spirituality is African. It takes more to be African than wearing dreadlocks and that chic and long earring. It takes a mindset to know who you are and always define your enemy. But you never allow your enemy to know that you know that he is your enemy. The art of deception is one of the best elements on a wall. When your enemy doesn't know that you hate him, he's stupid enough to open up to you. But when you go in with an element of "I hate you, cracker," then you know what? He's gonna always be on the defense. But if you go in and say, "You know what? I know he hates me and I hate him, but he will never know what my plan is to annihilate him," then you have won the war. Because anything he does on the outside of that, he will not be successful. And I used that against one of my professors that I, you know, when I was in college and I experienced racism. And I knew he was a racist. You know, and once I identified him as being a white supremacist and a racist, which means he practices what he was taught, then I knew how to annihilate him. So he tried his best to fail me, and he tried his best to do things to me. And all I did was wake up every morning, read my prayers, out of my heart, do my libation, and go to school and tell my ancestors to handle him. So when I did graduate and get my degree, he was so mad at me that he has never spoken to me since. Because he did
not. Okay, I think Mother Hattie wants to say something. We only have about 12 minutes, so that's why I want to try to go ahead on and let Mother Hattie say her little spiel. And may I say one thing after Mother Hattie, please? May I say one thing after Mother Hattie? And it will be brief. Okay.
Okay.
Mother Hattie, you haven't had an opportunity to speak tonight. Is there anything you'd like to share with us?
Well, I think that things have gotten worse all over the country, even since I was there at the University of Missouri, Columbia. And my other alma mater, University of Missouri, Kansas City. But I did my undergraduate work at a historically black college, Lincoln University in Jefferson City, Missouri. So I would say I matriculated from being born in the Deep South, Arkansas, growing up in Kansas City, Missouri, going to a historically black college, because that's what we were taught. Go to your historically black colleges and then go do some graduate work with the whites, see how they're doing, and then you'll be able to function very well in the world because you'll see multiple perspectives. And that's what many of us did do in my generation. Now, University of Missouri at Columbia, I was at Lincoln University, you know, during the 70s, those riotous years, the Black Panthers, and many of us during that time, University of Missouri at Columbia, were having their racial problems then, and we would go over and help the blacks during that time to do protests. We were at Lincoln University, which is virtually 30 miles away, historically black, and then you had your white university there, which there were some blacks there, but there were very few at that time. So now you're talking about in those 70s. I notice now there are more because like someone said earlier, many of those students are and always have been from St. Louis, Kansas City, that went to Mizzou. By the time I went there, I had already gone into my professional career, and I was back, you know, doing graduate studies there, and I was adult, had been married. So I had, a different kind of sort of perspective of everything because, you know, as an adult, as I think Brother Brown was saying, you have a different kind of way that you're relating to your educational situation when you're an adult and you're going back to school. So I didn't have a hard time at Mizzou. I must say it was respectful and decent, and I went in and I got out. However, and the same with University of Missouri, Kansas City. As an alumni, large group of black professionals that were very conscious of the black cause, supportive of the black movement, but going on and doing things. Things have gone so far backwards. And then after doing that, coming to Minnesota, actually that's where I really ran into and felt the very first thing of the most institutional racist behaviors that I had ever seen in my whole entire life. Now, my sisters that were older than me told me about this stuff, but I really didn't feel it and know it until I moved to Minnesota. And I saw it. And I felt it. And I worked very, very hard to resolve it and put in some things. And I was at a level, professional level, being here and was promoted very quickly because I had the courage to do some things, say some things. And so I've seen those things torn apart, even that were created here and gone, people gone backwards. So that's kind of my step. That's kind of what I wanted to say. And that, you know, people were very conscious during those years.
Thank you, Mother Hattie, for sharing that. You always have some story to share with us to give us a different point of view. Aja, okay, what I have to say is only going to take about 2 minutes, okay, because I know we're kind of running out of time. I want to say again, thoughts have power. We have to think of this, what we're in, as a whole universal thing. It's not just here on earth. It's a universal thing. Thoughts have power. Words have power. What we send out, the universe responds and it sends it back to us. Shaka Zulu would never use the words white supremacy. He would I could not see him using that word to his army because that would say to his army that they are supreme over us. So most of the words, like Brother Brown said, most of the words that we use today, they're created by the Europeans. So I really do not think that African people came up with this word, white supremacy. I just can't see us coming up with that. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but I'm not going to think that they did. I think not. And I also think that when we teach our children, the youth of the day, when we tell them, when we instill in their heads that they are supreme, then that's putting them back. That's holding them back because that's instilling in them, these people are supreme over you. Yes, they're bad. Yes, they're doing this, but they are supreme over you. That's instilling in their subconscious mind that, you know, these people are supreme. So I refuse to use that word. I mean, I know some people are going to continue to use it, but I refuse to use that word any longer, those phrases. Any longer, I would think of something else, like the young gentleman said, pink Europeans, energy parasites, anything other than white supremacists, because when you send that word out to the universe, it sends it right back to us. Yes, they are supreme.
White evil.
Yes.
White yes. Racism.
Yes, yes. Anything but supreme, because the word supreme means that they are over you. They are above you, and they are not. And I don't want us to teach our youth that they are over us, because they are not. We can use any kind of phrase other than supreme, but not supreme, not tell our youth that they are supreme, because they're not.
They respond very negatively when you call them white trash. What?
Oh, yeah.
You call me white trash? Oh.
We take away their power.
Call me the N-word and see what happens to you.
But they love white supremacy. They love that word. They love that word.
Well, it makes them happy.
What
I was referring to was in the context that the word is used not to denote their supremacy.
I know, but when we use it, though, it's still sending out that energy.
Okay,
it's still sending out the energy.
When I say white evil, white lies, white garbage, white spunk. No, what about European rejects? We all know who we talking about. The same people,
right?
From Australia to Austria. To St. Louis, man, hey, come on. We know who we talking about. We ain't nobody else like them.
Right. Don't give them that energy.
Know, well, when I say the context and the content is to define their...
But what does the word supreme mean to you, though, Brother Brown? We have four minutes, so whatever anybody has to say, I need for you to wrap it up.
Evil. Hey, the world's greatest rapist.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute, brother. Don't cut over me like that. That's impolite.
No, I'm not cutting over. Hey, go ahead.
Okay. I understand what the definition of supreme means. Supreme means something that's over everybody else. But what I was saying was that when we teach the context of what our children see, we have to look at the images.
Wrap it up, Brother Brown. 3 minutes. We have three minutes.
I'll do it on another program. That's all right.
Yeah. Let's just say that for another one. Because I know what you have to say is something we really need to hear, and I don't want you to have to rush through it. But let me see. Mother Dunham, are you still with us? Okay, not. Goodbye, Mother Donna. Okay. Anybody have any closing comments? Let's just wrap it up. Closing comments. Energy parasites, pink Europeans.
I really like energy parasites, because wherever you go, that seems to be the whole plan. Is to zap you from your energy, of positive energy, into some negative of some sort. I really like energy parasites. Brother Brown, I think it's just a way to describe what's going on. It's the word that you don't want us to use anymore. And I don't have any trouble not using it, but it certainly has never denoted that there is a supreme being other than whoever the person worships.
Just a moment, listeners. We got cut off. I'm trying to reconnect.
This service is provided in high definition by free conference call HD. Access code accepted. This conference is being recorded. Q&A session started.
Enough. Let's make it plain. When is enough enough?
Enough. Yes, right now. Because we are in the shift, and it is time for people to shift. And I do love this whole idea, Aja, of changing the way we think and changing our verbiage in terms of looking at ourselves and looking at other people and how people look at us. Focus on the positive, strive to be the best, do the best, and like Scotty said, we can be concerned about certain things, but don't let that absorb your life and control your thinking and your actions. So I want to thank everybody for listening and tuning in. I salute those students that stood up, Jonathan Butler. You guys made history because this is what we needed, and I hope that this will spill over to other universities and these other students and athletes will recognize their power and begin to stand up, speak out, and show up and show out like y'all say in church and just change things. And let's prepare for the shift and let's just do this. Tune back in to us on Friday night. We plan to have some college students on that will share some of their experiences on college, on their college campuses and what they have been experiencing and what are their thoughts in terms of what's going on at Mizzou and at Yale. Thanks again. Peace and good night. Namaste. Namaste.